Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 115, coming at you right now. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and it's a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, with daily postings now on Facebook. And on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. This episode 115 is yet to be titled. This is our third straight episode of just reviews. There's been that many games coming out that we've been playing, and we want to review games, because that is our first and foremost task in what we do on the Portal Gaming Podcast. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me is...
Your co-host, Brian.
Hey! Yeah. It has been the two of us in a long time.
I know, it's been... it feels like it's even been longer, just from...
Yeah.
Just in general. I'm sure it hasn't been as bad, but...
Well, it's like I gave you the Christmas... Not I gave you, but you needed the Christmas time to just kind of do things, and I had a lot with PAX and other things going on. I was able to cover a lot.
And then we did a few, like, you know...
Yeah, everybody's. The,
yeah.
But so I haven't been able to catch up with you, so...
Yeah.
Here we are, 9:30 in the middle of this storm.
Some
which,
rain.
Which just seems to be rain at the moment. Not too bad. There were things closing and canceling and whatnot, but...
Yeah. So you're doing all right, though?
I'm doing good. I just finished my first solo game of Blackout Hong Kong.
Nice.
And it was very fun.
So now it'll be one to get up to the store, or not there yet?
No, I think we're going to play it at the store on Thursday night.
Oh, okay.
So,
nice. So that should be a good one to...
Yeah.
I guess this might be posted after that, right?
This will probably be posted on Friday.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I'll have already played a second time, hopefully, is my... is my goal. I really want to play some of these games with Kathy, but we are like trying to laser beam Scythe Rise of Fenris right now. So
yeah, no, it's good to have that focus.
Yeah, yeah, and kind of have it set up. So and we're enjoying it. So Kathy more so than me, and that's a good place to be, I find. So for all that, I don't know what's new at the store. We've done the whole. Hey, the store's been, you know, changed and readapted and shelving.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been a little bit of a lull. I think all the other, like, all the companies are kind of catching up after the holiday season, too. So, you know, it feels like there hasn't been a ton. I mean, we've had a few events kind of starting back up, like on Saturdays, a little more miniatures focused. But, I mean, that's still, like, a huge portion of what goes on there. So that's
right. That's
awesome to see. I know... I'm kind of in the mode right now of looking to lay out the next few months. We've got Toy Fair coming up in February.
Yeah.
And then after that, we're hopefully going to be shooting out to Gamma for a little bit to do the trade day there. Or the
Not
trade
me.
Show.
You.
Right, yeah. Like a few people just kind of... We'll see. We'll see what materializes, but it's kind of laying all that stuff out now, getting the groundwork to lead into the bigger release times of the year.
I want to make sure you take podcast cards
and
hand those out because we might start to triangulate some connections like, oh, I know Brant. I've talked to Brant at this event. No, now I'm putting you with the store with that. And that'd be good. So I think that's
so I'll good. Hand out your business, your portal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I hand out yours all the time. So
so it just makes more sense.
It's fair. Yeah. In terms of that. Yeah. But just connections that we made at PAX. You weren't there. So
right.
Be good in terms of that. Yeah. And I'm doing ConCon.
Yeah.
I'm going to be down there. I am teaching Root Founding Fathers because I've wanted to play that, so I figure I'll learn it and teach it. So it's like a Jolly Roger production, I think. It seems cool. It's Jason Matthews? Is that his name? Is he the guy that did Twilight Struggle?
I want to say so, but I'm not 100% sure.
So, yeah, it's his design. So it's like a card-driven game about, like... constructing the founding documents of a nation. I mean, it's very America-focused, but, you know, just that idea, and you're trying to vote for different things, and it's kind of basic in structure. They were asking for old stuff that would be interesting, so I was like, well, here's something that I bet nobody's teaching, so I'll go for that. Root, of course, because it's a hard teach.
Yeah.
So I obviously want to take that on. Teaching Bridge, like the card game, again, kind of going for that, like... let's just teach something that people don't want to teach, and underwater cities, because that's like the new hotness. So
yeah, so a good mix.
Yeah, exactly. I went old, kind of old, things people haven't heard of, I don't know, whatever. So hopefully that'll be good. Of course, now that I'm playing some of this new stuff like Blackout and Forum, Trajanum, and whatever else, you know, has been around, Wingspan, those would be great to teach too. But hey, if they're just around, I'll pick one up and teach somebody. Like,
yeah, no, that makes sense.
So I'll be down there. So I'll like back to back with you with Gamma, because you'll be gone, you'll come back, and then I'll head down there. Yeah. So,
and but there's usually a good turnout. That's a great convention, so it's not too far away.
And this is the first year I've seen the Game On group like kind of take it on.
Yeah,
like, people are talking about it and heading down that direction, so that should be good. We should have good representation from them. I'm not saying from like us,
right?
From
just people that we know merges. Through.
Yeah, there you go.
Local people that, which makes sense for a local con, right?
Yeah,
but
cool. Yeah. We should review games.
All right.
Can you kick us off with a game? Because they've heard me talk so much lately.
So they're tired of that?
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess... So I was on vacation for a little bit, and I brought a few games down to play with like my father-in-law and Rachel and everything like that. And there were a few that really jumped out from that trip. We got a ton of plays down for Keyflow. We also played a lot of Kashgar, and since I got back... I've been playing a lot of Wingspan, so those are kind of the three primary ones that I've really hit the table a lot for me. So I don't know, had you talked about any of those already? Maybe Kashgar.
Kathy and I talked about Wingspan.
Okay,
but you've played a lot more since I've played it again since.
So I guess we could just start there. I think that's Wingspan, a great thing to talk about. From Stonemaier. Yeah, it's going to be an upcoming retail release. So hopefully we can get a few copies. I know it was pretty allocated. It sounded like it was going to be very heavily allocated because, I don't know, it kind of has a lot of traction prior to the actual, to the release, right? So you're kind of building up your bird sanctuary. Is that what the gist is? You're playing all these cards to increase your actions and kind of a really relatively simple engine builder where you're kind of, you know, adding cards that do special things and you're going through and... You know, there are only a few different actions to take, but it's really balancing out how you try to work your own hand of cards and how you play off of your bonus cards as well as whatever bonuses for the end of the round there are. And it's just, I think it's been great. I've been playing it a lot with Rachel and then, you know, just a few groups as well where it's just worked. It's worked great. And it presents really well. I'm sure you guys hit on that. I know when we first opened it, it was like the rule book felt unique.
Oh, yeah. It's like a linen finished rule book or something.
Which is never something I would have imagined I would be talking about for a game. But it's just great production, and the gameplay, it sometimes can take a little while to kind of get people over that hump, but it's one of those games that you want to play once, and then you can immediately play it right after. I think it's just got a little bit to it where... You know, just seeing how the engine will materialize over the course of the game, you want to play it again and like do stuff better or seemingly better. And I don't know, I've really been enjoying it a ton. So we just played it again the other night, which is awesome.
Yeah, so we played with five and we taught three people. So, it, you know, it was like long-ish.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, what, 90, it was more than 90, not quite 2 hours. So maybe an hour 45.
So maybe long for you, but... Short for me.
Yeah, that's true. Which was, you know, pretty long for kind of, like, I would say the game is light, but obviously reading all the cards makes it medium the first couple times. But it's definitely like a heavier, heavier version of, oh my gosh, Splendor. Like where you're building up this engine and getting all these things going. So imagine if all the cards in Splendor had text. It's not... like Splendor in terms of that, but that's basically the idea. You're going to collect things to score points, and it's not a race, because I guess there's other elements to that. But you think of that idea. So if Splendor, like, for people where Splendor runs out, like, oh, I no longer need to play Splendor, this game is going to run into that, probably a little further, because there's 170 cards and there's text. But none of the cards are surprising. There aren't any cards that are like, whoa, that changes the game. They're all kind of what you expect. Oh, I can gain this resource, or bonus this resource, or I can do this extra, or that extra. But that makes it great, because then you're kind of in that realm of expectations. No card feels more powerful than another card. I haven't seen any that I'm like, oh, no. The bonus cards are probably the biggest change. I had one that I just couldn't score.
Yeah.
There was nothing I could do, but you just don't go for it. You do something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think in Wingspan, the tough thing is really, like it's a slow build for, like, actually feeling productive.
Right.
Right? And by the time you're generating stuff that's that feels efficient, the game's basically, you know, it's speeding up, so it's going to be finished pretty soon after you actually feel like you're doing your full running through your full system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know just the way people have to, like, have to plan out their turns can be very difficult, just based on, I need to do this, and then this, and then this, to do this. And then trying to do all that calculation, I can see that's probably the most difficult part.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do know what you have to do. Like, at least in your mind, you know what you're trying to accomplish. And I think that's just, like, from playing a lot of games, I think it's a little easier to just figure that out on the fly and kind of know, all right, I definitely need to do these five things, and the sixth thing I can figure out later. But I think it's tough to really, if you're not constantly thinking that way, you have to really lay it all out and know, okay, I need all of these actions to try to accomplish this thing that I'm working toward.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that's the thing that makes it tough for, you know, for a first play for a lot of people. And that's just kind of where you visualize it a lot better once you've actually played through it and you know how limiting it can be and what you actually are trying to accomplish.
Right.
And I love games that kind of that give you incentive to go specific ways. You know, I really love just that there are bonus cards that you kind of start the game off with. So your, like, stuff is valued a little differently to you.
Right.
And then having those end of round bonuses as well. I love playing toward those because that gives you something to, like, you know, it's just an added bonus because you could be playing the game and not focus on those, but I feel like if everyone did that, then you'd all be playing about the same at the same points pace, if right. that makes sense.
Right.
So I just love playing toward those two things and then figuring out how to do it the best way that that you have available to you. So yeah, I love Wingspan so far, and you know, I've got like 7 plays down, so it's one that's quickly getting to a a point where I've played it enough to really feel comfortable, you know, just bringing it up, teaching it, getting it out there for people to try.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'm totally happy with the game. I love the game. Kathy and I think on the last episode were referencing, like, Fleet the Dice game, which I absolutely adore, and Wingspan, which I, you know, really, really like. If these games are represented, if we get these two games every month for the next 11 months, that's 24 games. I'll have to narrow down my top 10 right there. And those aren't even, like, heavier, your medium games, right? I mean, Wingspan is, you know,
Well, it's one of those simple mechanisms.
Yeah, with hard decisions and a lot to read. But my point being, like, Wingspan could end up being my number 11 game. There could be 10 games better than it, but it's great. Like, you know what I mean? So that shapes out so well. I could see.
Well, when did Castell come out?
Pretty early on. Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, people still are razzing me on that. I was working with BJ from Board Game Gumbo. We're doing the Dice Tower Awards.
Yeah.
I might have been telling people this. And he was razzing me. Like, he's like, I listened to that episode. It was so good. And the chemistry. I was like, all right, where are the number ones? And then you dropped Castell. And he was like, where did that come from? And I was like, well, me and the Murph brothers. Brothers Murph. Vassal always says it backwards. Or Brothers Murph. So we're together on that. Cool.
So.
Awesome. Keyflow. Tell us about that.
Yeah, where to start? It's a drafting game, kind of in the same environment as Keyflower or all, like, a bunch of different key games from Richard Bries, and this one is intended to be a simpler, faster version of Keyflower. I believe that's kind of how it was presented, how I was assuming it would come out. And when I opened it up, learned through, it is just a fairly straightforward drafting game. You're building up a tableau with two rows of cards. Your first row, you start off with like a home card, which gives you like a starting point to kind of bring resources into your town and do that sort of stuff. But you'll go through play through four seasons. Each season has different cards that are unique to those seasons. You deal them all out at the beginning of the game, and starting off, you just have your home card and then a hand of cards to draft from for spring. You'll go through, pick a card, everyone picks a card at the same time, and then you flip it over, kind of like Sushi Go, that sort of style draft, and then you put it into, like, most often you're building up your own tableau, either adding a row of road cards to your section, kind of building off of your home, or you can add some river cards that are just in a row right below your road tile cards. So it's, you've got two rows in your tableau, and then the top row is kind of, it gives you actions that you can take over the course of the game, because the other option you can draft is meeple cards, and those cards will be placed either onto your, like, above your row, your top row, or your the other player's top row, and when you send the meeples out, they do whatever that card is that they're going to. Now, it's a lot of times it's kind of building up, collecting resources, or you know, doing certain things to upgrade the cards that you've already drafted that you have in front of you. But there are a lot of different ways that you're trying to build up. And as the game progresses, it kind of gives you another some stuff to work toward. At the very beginning of the game, you also do have a hand of kind of objective cards, like some of the winter cards that will eventually get into the winter deck as that season comes up. But those give you, like at the very end of the game, kind of in the similar vein as Keyflower, that last season, it's giving you things that straight up just give you points. You're not trying to work on your engine anymore. You're really trying to use your engine to get you something toward the end of the game. I know that doesn't hit on everything, but you're going through, each season does something a little bit different, and you're building up toward whatever it is. At the very end of the game, you'll have this whole array of cards in front of you, as well as whatever meeple cards have been sent to your village, and then you just figure out ways to allocate whatever cards you have and try to score points based on whatever, like, winter cards or end game cards you have in your tableau. And it, I don't know, I was a little bit surprised just with the, you know, how it did work. It was one of those games that I was glad I brought it down, and it hit the table very, like, you know, a few times that vacation, just with the three of us. We sat down, and I really enjoyed it just as that three-player game. Each play felt very unique from what we experienced, just because there are some cards that are left out every game.
Right.
And, you know, I never felt like I was trying new things, and they were all kind of working towards something different, which was a great feeling, you know, when you can kind of do it, and it's rewarding you to try something new and really play what you see. So I know we'd played it again at the store after I got back, and that was coming off of, like, oh, I love this, like, this game is great, I had a great time with it, and we played a five-player game. I didn't immediately get that same sense that it was, that I liked it as much at five, but, you know, I haven't played it again since for the, like, that higher player count, but I was having a great time as a three-player game over that vacation break, so... I think you had hopped in for just that five-player game. So,
yeah.
I don't know if there's anything you wanted to...
Yeah, I mean, essentially, like, they've taken Keyflower from a bidding auction game to a card drafting game. So, a la Seven Wonders, or you referenced Sushi Go. And that makes sense in terms of, like, the game is more accessible, it's quicker, it can handle that higher player count, especially in a shorter period of time. You remove the interaction except with your neighbors. So that's what you're referencing somewhat. In three-player, your neighbors are the only other players in the game.
Yeah.
And in five-player, there's others. So I totally understand it. I almost feel like if somebody hasn't played Keyflower, it's like, great, let's play Keyflow, because the scoring systems are basically the same in both games.
Yeah.
So it's like you're introducing all that with a simpler mechanism, and drafting is a little bit easier. For some reason, bidding always, I find, turns people off until they play enough bidding and auction games, because I didn't like auctioning 5 years ago and bidding. And there's still some, the whole blind bid, you lose your whole thing, you know, nobody really likes that. But there's so many now that I really do. Yeah. Now that I've played it, I really like that mechanism. But it really did make me miss Keyflower and the auctioning and the gaining different color meeple. Like, it's just so much more clever. But, you know, we played it in was it an hour with the Teach?
Right, yeah, it was very quick, you know? Which is awesome.
Keyflower was 5 or 6 would get up there.
Oh, not 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah.
With 5 or 6 people. Okay.
Yeah, Keyflower with 5 or 6, I mean, if people knew it, yeah, it might be 2 hours or 2.5, but that game, I think, could be 3 hours if people really get locked up on trying to bid. I don't know. Like, yeah. I played 2-player, and it's usually like 75 minutes, I feel like, to play a game of Keyflower. It's pretty fast, but I could see a higher player count. So I still think Keyflower is the superior game, but the accessibility here, mm-hmm. the ability to teach people, like, oh, you've never played Keyflower? Let's play Keyflow. So, you know, Keyflow, Seven Wonders, Paper Tales. I feel like Paper Tales is my favorite of that. I haven't really expanded Seven Wonders much beyond, what was the first expansion? The Leaders?
The Leaders.
Yeah, and some of the other Wonders. I've never gotten into all that stuff, so I could see that adding a bunch more. Paper Tales is kind of my favorite of those.
Yeah.
But exactly what you're saying. I could see three mm-hmm. players and just teaching this and kind of learning the game over and over, and the different routes are probably the highest in this game versus Seven Wonders or Paper Tales. Like, Seven Wonders really feels like science, military, blue buildings, and they're very straightforward, and you just kind of hammer them home. But this game is, let me get cows, and let me get boats, and let me get resources on spaces, and then some different combination, because there's how many endgame scoring cards?
Like, oh, yeah,
30. So that end is really cool, that there's a different way to score every time. So
yeah, I think with what was it, with the 3-player game, I really just loved the way, like, not only that you could use every card available based on what you have, like what meeple cards you have. Because there are limitations, you can't just play a meeple to whatever. But with a 3-player game, you're always going to potentially have access to, like, the other cards that people have in front of them. So you're never completely blocked off of something, right? But with a 5-player game, like, there was half the table that I just didn't have to pay attention to.
Right.
And along with that, with a 3-player game, like, just doing the draft, I can kind of balance, okay, I really need this card, but I don't think anyone else needs this card, so I'll just send it around and hope it gets back to me.
Let it ride!
And I think I just, that push your luck sort of nature to it, I think that helped it a bit. And then, obviously, like, you can get really, you know, I think there was one card that just didn't make any sense why someone took it out of the game when I was playing 3-play. There was one card where it was like, why would you do that? And it's like, I know why, because they were blocking me from getting something really good. But it was just like, it was just funny to see that, and it was another element to it, you know, if that's if that makes sense. So
nice.
Yeah, so that was Keyflow.
Cool. What was the third one?
Kashgar.
Oh, right.
I mean, I can just hit on that real quick. Did you guys talk about it?
No, we haven't talked about it yet.
Oh, Kashgar, Merchants of the Silk Road. Kind of a deck builder style game. Not really, but you've got 3 caravans that you start the game off with, which are just 2 cards each to start, I believe, right? You're going through using those caravans to add more, to draft or take cards from, like, from a tableau? They're face up?
No, it's a deck.
You just draw cards,
right?
You draw cards, pick some more to add to your caravans, tuck them in the back, and as you activate cards, you just pull them from the front and send them to the back of the line. And you're going through, you're trying to race kind of to a point value. You're going through playing till someone gets a certain number of points, and then that'll trigger the end of the game. But you're trying to collect resources with your cards. Some of the cards just gain you resources that you have on, like, a resource tracking board. You're going through doing that, and eventually trying to turn those resources in to fulfill orders, which I guess is very... I don't know. I guess it's a little dry, right?
Well, it's seeing that it's a face-up deck builder.
Yeah.
That's the catch.
So you have to balance, like, do I want to use this card so I can cycle through this row, this column of cards, or do I want to do this one that might be a little bit better, but, you know, I don't need this caravan as much as the other ones.
Yeah, the other pieces of your gaining spices and trading them to get land or mm-hmm. points or whatever,
it's all just points.
That's what
from
they
whatever.
Tacked on.
Yeah, you're going through,
but
and
it's all the effects.
I don't know. I played it a few times. Just that was another one that I brought down. That's easy to easy to transport, and it plays really quickly too. I know we'd knocked this out at the store like a few.
We played it twice in a weeks. Row.
Yeah, you know, it was one that you picked up, learned on the spot, and then you know the three of us played, and it was, you know, it almost played too quickly. I feel like there were times where we were like taking turns while other people were finishing their turns.
Who does that?
Which, yeah, I know it was a completely different than.
Yeah. How did it go?
I just played with Rachel. We just played a few two-player games, and it was good. I don't know. I guess it hasn't hit the table since we got back, so I don't know if that's saying anything. But it definitely it was fun to try to experiment. There are a lot of different ways you can test out how to play the game. And I know like it did feel a little bit more, like with two players, it felt a little bit more like, oh, this person's just going to win. You know, like they've got their system going a little better, and there's nothing I can really do.
Yeah.
Which happens with a lot of different games, like deck builders and stuff like that. Right. A lot. You can see one person's just taking, like, you know, five-minute turns, and the other person's like, okay, I don't have anything to do. Go.
Yeah, yeah.
So... But it was fun. It was fun to test it out, and I don't know. I really do. I enjoyed Kashgar. So,
yeah, totally makes me feel clever. At some point, it can make you feel frustrated, or okay, now I was clever and it's on rails, like you said, right? Like, oh, I figured out the part to now make the deck just work. And it certainly is unique in the deck building cat. Like, it is a deck builder,
yeah,
but it doesn't look or feel like a deck builder, right? And one of the clever parts is there are cards that just, you buy them to remove them. You buy them for a one-use ability, or eventually a one-use ability, and they're gone. And that's pretty creative in terms of that. And then the static cards, the Patriarch and Matriarch that come through, that force you to get another card, so you can't keep your engine perfectly efficient.
Right.
In terms of that. I mean, relatively you can, and there are cards to move those, which are kind of pretty powerful for that, but... I really liked the game. We had a runaway leader in one of the games I played, like a four player. It was just like they scored 25 points, I feel like.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
They scored 25 points, and then we were like 12, 11, and 9.
Yeah.
Like, it was just huge. So, like, you were kind of saying with the two player game, and I couldn't figure out why, because it just was quick. Like you said, it was like, whoa, that was really fast. So,
yeah, there's just some times that it feels like that can happen, but cool. I don't know. I don't know if it's between that and maybe it's more the blackout Hong Kong behind me. I want to play Mombasa again now.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of feels similar to... I'm picturing that. Maybe Kashgar to a cycle Mombasa through,
but then it all
thing.
Comes back to one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that one.
Probably more different. So that blackout Hong Kong sitting right behind me. So.
There you go. Cool, I'm going to run through a couple games, and then we're going to do some like first impressions, because we're not quite sure on... some of these games from one play, but we'll talk through those without kind of explaining the game to go through. So things I got to play that I haven't reviewed a bunch of. I played High Treason, The Trial of Louis Riel. So this is a game from Victory Point Games, and it's this world on trial that I don't know they've made another one. They seem to have this idea of making a bunch of games of famous trials. So The Trial of Louis Riel is actually pretty interesting. I think it's very popular Canadian history, but not American history, so we don't learn about it. But Louis Riel was kind of when there was a revolution with the Western Canada fighting against Eastern Canada. Like, they tried to create a revolution, it didn't work, so he ran away to America, and this is like 1800s, mid-1800s, kind of same time we were having our Civil War. And then they sprung up another revolution. He went back. He was captured, and they put him on trial. And in 5 days, they changed the rules for their court system, and they hung him for treason. So it was like a big trial that they were just trying to really make an example in terms of all that. So that's what's happening. You're doing this trial, and you have the prosecution, and you have the defense, and you're working your way through that. And it's a card-driven game, and the cards are kind of multi-use. So what's interesting is... the rounds are all very similar, but you have all the different rounds in the game. So you have the jury selection, and then you kind of have your elements of the trial, and you have your deliberation. I missed one of them. I can't remember. I apologize. And you go through all those phases, and you're playing sets of cards from your hand. So you have a common deck, and you choose a couple cards, then you save one for the end round, and you're just kind of going back playing back and forth. The very beginning, you're doing jury selection, so you're finding out traits. So the prosecution wants to find government workers who speak English and are Protestant, if I remember correctly. And the other side is looking for people who speak French and, are tradesmen and tend to favor Catholicism, because these were kind of who's going to side with who. And so you're looking at all their traits are face down, and then you get a chance to kind of reveal some of those traits, or just you know them. And then one at a time, you deselect of the 12 juries, so there's 6 jurors left. That was one of the things in the trial, is normally there are 12 jurors on trial, but they only had 6, so they could limit who was there. Then you're going through playing cards, and there's a lot more to it, but I'm not going to run through. But there's basically a bunch of tracks, and the goal is for the prosecution to score 100 points. If they get 100 points, then they win. And so each juror will match with those traits that I was describing, what their job is, what their religion is, and what their language is that they speak. And you're moving these tracks of how much those will be worth. What's interesting for the defense is that they're just trying to lower your point total. They're not scoring points themselves. Which feels a little bit funny. I know Kathy was playing the defense and was like, all I'm trying to do is lower your points, not score right. points for myself. There's some other things where you're trying to prove temporary insanity, and the prosecution has to show guilt and a few other pieces. But all in all, it's like a 45-minute game. At first, it was like taking us a while to go through all the steps and understand how the cards work. And I was like, oh, this could be a while. And then boom, 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 boom. We flew through the phases and ended up being about 45 minutes with the teach. It was interesting. We enjoyed it. I wasn't sure. I was playing with Kathy, and at first she was like, what is this, and what am I doing, and why am I doing this, and why am I just keeping you from scoring points? We got to the end, once we kind of cruised through those rounds, she was like, oh, I really like that. I would play that again. And I agree. It was a good, like, it's really like a 30 to 45 minute, kind of filler style two-player game. But it's an interesting back and forth that you don't have in some other two-player games. It's a little bit generic, so the theme is interesting, but if you don't read the text on the cards, there's not too much right. to it. But they're trying to create this world on trial so they could do other famous trials in that same system. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, and it didn't overstay its welcome at all, which was great.
Yeah.
I thought that was key to the game. So that was High Treason, The Trial of Louis Riel.
Yeah, it looks like they're doing a second edition of it soon.
Oh, okay.
So. I don't know, when's the street date? End of March, it looks like.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
There you go. That was good timing to review that, then.
Yeah.
You and I actually got to play Shards of Infinity with the expansion. Had you played Shards of Infinity prior to that?
No, that was one that I brought down and kind of read a little bit through, but I didn't end up... It just never materialized, so...
So, Shards of Infinity is a... It's not only two-player now, the
but
expansion
it feels
even,
like it, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's probably best at two-player, like Magic and other games that create formats to be multiplayer. I have no doubt
right.
that they figured out how to make it multiplayer as well. But
Star Realms or something could be, right?
Yeah, so...
But, I don't know, most people end up
playing
that.
Yeah, there's the attack left, or you got to choose these things or whatever it is. So, but essentially, it's a two-player card... A deck builder where you attack each other, and the goal is to get each other down. So the unique mechanism here is the mastery, and Kathy and I did an episode, boy, I'm going to say like 30 episodes back, we compared Hero Realms and Shards of Infinity.
Okay.
So we have talked through that a whole bunch, but there's the mastery mechanism. What the expansion adds is just some more cards to shuffle in. Those cards sometimes focus on your character, because the characters were generic. It was just, what color do you want to be, or what symbol do you want?
Right.
Now it'll say, oh, if you're in this character, this card is better for you. As well as, which I thought was a great way to handle it, instead of starting with unique decks, they give you 2 unique cards, and when you get to level 10 mastery, of which 30 is the max, just so people realize that, you get to pick one of these 2 cards to put in your deck, which are... From what I've seen of them, pretty divergent paths. you know, in terms of what they did. It wasn't incredibly right. that way, but they, you know, this one was, oh, you're going for a mastery routine. This one you're going for, like, healing or whatever it was, you know, in terms of that. So I thought that was a pretty good way to add in, you know, some of that. I mean, would people like unique decks from the start? Probably, that, but that whole balancing mechanism right. with what's in the deck would be tricky. So I thought it was a pretty good way to pull on that. But yeah, this game is still just really good. I just really enjoy it. It's very combo-y. Right. It's just got all those things that a deck builder has. It has card removal, which people love. It's just very, it knows what it wants to do with the deck. So
yeah, it's very quick. I mean, it just, yeah, like you're like, it's very smooth. It, I know it, it did feel a little one-sided because I got a few cards that just
yeah
cycled through my, like, you know, just got rid of cards, like the bad cards from my deck. But I feel like that's just the way it happens every now and then, kind of.
It, yeah, it's probably a best of three game once you know it really
right.
well.
Right, you can play it that quickly too. Yeah. So it was really fun. I'm glad that that we did get it to the table.
And I think the expansion's like $10 retail, so it's yeah, a no brainer.
Probably around there, right? Like, I mean, it's just it's not very expensive. It doesn't have a ton, but it gives yeah. you a lot of value for it.
But it also has the solo mode, which is really good.
Okay.
So it has the rules for that. Now, could you read the solo mode rules without? Sure, whatever. but essentially, it's very simple. Like, you just draw a card, and then the card matches the card. So if I draw a purple card, all the purple cards in the center go off and attack me.
Hmm.
So it's really simple, and then it just changes some things. Oh, card draw means this instead. Mastery means this instead. Really simple. So it was really smart. Like, it was a good thing. And then they put team play in there. I think they put, like, a one-versus-all mode in there. So, again, modes you could all read about, but, hey, for $10, you could get all those modes and get the extra cards to throw in. But I just wanted to comment on those other ones as well. Plus, you got a first play in. So I thought that was key to go from.
Yeah, definitely worth the mention.
So. Yep. I played Railroad Inc. I played the Blazing Red Edition. I've also played the... Oh, no. Cold as ice blue. I don't know.
Is it deep blue or something?
Deep blue, yeah. And, man, I just don't feel like I am a Roll and Write enthusiast. But when I play them, I have fun. Like, it was totally fun to do this. And so this is a 7-round Roll and Write. You roll four. Have you played it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, the red one I did.
Okay. You roll four dice. And then they show either tracks or streets, and you've got a grid, and you've got to fill in what you see on the dice. You've got some bonus things you can do. And there are stations, which will transfer a track into a road. And essentially, there's 12 outs, three on each side, and you're trying to connect all of those. You're trying to build through the center. You're trying to build longest road and longest railroad of your own.
Right.
And then you don't want any stops, like where it just runs into empty track. Those are negative points. 7 rounds, add them up. Who's got the most points, winner. Like, it's really straightforward, but the think is really like, and then all of a sudden you realize there's 2 rounds left. I can't, this plan isn't working. And it was really fun. It really was. And I don't know. I don't think, like, there's a new Roll and Write. I can't wait. Like, I got to get it. But when I play them, I enjoy them. And of course, Fleet the Dice Game is amazing.
Well, there's a lot that you can kind of experiment with with yeah. that system, which we're seeing. I mean, a lot are coming out.
Yeah, like 120-something so. Last year came out.
It was that many?
I think so.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not very expensive.
How many are out now, maybe, right. in total?
But they're not very expensive, and they give you, like, good replayability, and it's a fun thing. And if you've played some, you kind of have a good sense of what you're trying to do, which is, right. you know, which is helpful if you're just trying to play something quick. Because I think most of these are kind of intending to be more in that filler, yeah. you know, just play it in 15, 20 minutes, but, you know, have a lot of good decisions in yeah. there as well, so.
Cool, and then I would just mention that I played Quaxa Quedlinburg. You kind of walked in the middle of that game, and it just went over so well. Like, the people who lost, like, enjoyed it. The people who won, enjoyed it. It's just a fun game. Like, you just have fun playing that game. And I think I mentioned to you, because you'd come over to the house, I just said, every time I play this game, it's more fun. It's such a great sign of that. I don't remember if I had it in my top 10 list. I can't remember if it was like 7 or if I pushed it out. But whichever, it's a great game. I really like the Quats of Quedlinburg. Like, and I remember I was annoyed when it won and Heaven and Ale didn't. I'm not playing Heaven and Hell anymore, but I'm playing this regularly. So, you know, there's something to be said for just what this game is and just the joy it evokes. And people just want to push the buttons and they want to laugh about it. And they want to, okay, I'm done. And then while everybody else is drawing their chips, they're like, okay, one more.
Yeah.
So.
Heaven and Hell is a little more...
Oh, yeah.
It's a smaller niche for for that game.
Definitely. So.
Which is great that this has gotten the attention and the U.S. release, too. So, you know, it's been done the right way, I think.
Cool. All right, we're just going to do some first impressions on a handful of games here because we know people want to hear about them, but we're not sure that our one play of these is enough to kind of constitute reviewing and feeling like we know what the game is like and everything. But so we're not going to describe a lot of these games, but we're just going to kind of give a couple sentences each. So the first one is New Frontiers.
Yep.
Which is from Rio Grande Games, Tom Lehman. Is there another designer on that? Is it the same one that did Roll for the Galaxy with him?
Is it? I might be wrong. I don't...
All right. Well, we apologize. We're not trying to be wrong. So, but this is basically Race for the Galaxy, the board game. And
it just got his name on there. So I think we're clear.
Okay. So it's Race for the Galaxy, the board game. So we've got Race for the Galaxy, Roll for the Galaxy, Jump Drive, New Frontiers. So New Frontiers, there's a designer diary that's pretty famous now. People have been talking about it that Tom did about how this relates to Puerto Rico. And so you have a lot, like, instead of cards and everything, you have a lot of your tiles out in the center of the board already being able to see. So there's a lot of information. So he's removing all that random card draw. In fact, the only randomness in the game, I believe, is you draw worlds out of a bag. And so it's trying to remove a lot of that randomness that's in there otherwise and get to being a little bit more refined of a game, I would imagine, or... Like a little more strategic. You can plan out what you're going to do. We played it 5-player, and it wasn't like brutally slow. It wasn't AP. It was just you're taking the pace, especially after playing Jump Drive.
Right.
You're taking the pace and you're slowing it down. Somebody chooses an action, and then everybody follows the action non-simultaneously. Now, I see a lot of people saying, come on, everybody can do that simultaneously. The one would be the draft of the top. You have to pull world tiles and then pass them around in the correct player order.
For the most part, there are only a couple things that could potentially be problematic.
Right. Oh, if I purchase something and now it's gone from the center. So we probably could have sped that up and we were kind of purposely slowing it down to make sure everybody understood what was going on. So it was tough at 5, and I keep saying I want to play this at 2 because I know Rotto really enjoyed it and he plays 2-player famously. And I want to try it at 3 just to kind of have that kind of normal pace in terms of that. So it definitely wasn't a negative impression, but it did feel like, why am I playing Crawl through the Galaxy when I could play Race through the Galaxy or for the Galaxy, whichever, in terms of that. But there was nothing inherently wrong, and I know a lot of people are really liking the game. So that's making me be like, okay, that wasn't... And we had a little bit of like a party atmosphere, like people were coming in and we were trying to get ready for other games because we ended up with like 10-12 people that night. So
it took a little too long and people didn't have the system figured out, like, without, you know, it was all, everyone had to kind of read a little bit of everything. And, you know, even with that, you know, I'm sure there were people that just didn't get the full the full experience of what they were hoping to get, because if there's something that they missed or skipped over, you know, it's a little too easy to do that without having played, you know, a few times already.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think back. I don't think there was one in that series. Like, I don't think I liked Race for the Galaxy or Roll for the Galaxy as much as I do, like, after just that initial play.
It's true.
Which is good. I mean, Jump Drive, I think, is kind of in a different category, just because it's like it's not intending to be anything more than just play through as quick as you can, in a sense, you know, just, you know, cards are hitting the table like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did give those other two a shot, and I know, like, I guess kind of like what you're saying, like, it seems like there's something there. Hopefully we can figure it out and enjoy it. But you know, it's tough to get this one back to the table after, like, all these other games have been coming out and taking up, you know, that time for it. But at some point, that'll come back out, so.
All right, next is Architects of the West Kingdom. Man, have people been loving this game. This is on people's top tens. People are posting all the time, had such a great time. And I heard people saying, like, the two-player game isn't amazing, but the four- and five-player game are really good, and we played a four-player game of it.
Right.
So this is from Renegade Game Studios, and it's the new, like, trilogy following Raiders of the North Sea, or the Raiders trilogy, of which Raiders of the North Sea I really like. We had that initial game we played. I mean, we're not going to go Raiders of the North Sea, but we had that, and I really like that game. The other ones in that series, I don't really care for. And so people have been so excited, so we're like, all right, we got to play this. And we played a four-player game at the store. It just there wasn't anything. Like, we could steal each other's people, and that was fine, but then you could get them back.
Right. And, I mean, it also stalled out at a point, right?
Yeah, we had nowhere to go. Like.
So I think this was kind of that perfect one where it felt like maybe we were doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you know, something inherently in the game, because it didn't jump out to anyone as, oh, this game was one of the best releases of the year.
Right.
So I guess that's a good thing about hearing so many people talk about it, you know, and getting a lot of positive buzz means that there was something to a lot of people. And right. hopefully we just, you know, missed something or overlooked something, and there's more to it than we found. But yeah, like you're saying, like it was another game to me after that first play. And it didn't make me want to get it back to the table anytime. So, like, it wasn't one that was jumping out. Like, I would gladly hop in and play it, but it didn't seem like it was one that was, this is the must play of the year.
Yeah. And people are like, oh, the worker placement is just really, like, I mean, innovative is probably a strong word. I don't think that's, but just really interesting. But it's like, oh, if I put a worker in the woods, I get one wood. And then if I put another worker, I get two wood. And that was fine, but it wasn't like, I wanted it to be more interactive. Like, if Brian puts one there and then I follow him up, now I get two. So then he's trying to remove mine. So that, like, I wanted more interaction with that. And instead it was like I could have had my own board where I was doing all these things. Right. The common board didn't really do much. And there's definitely paths to victory, so it wasn't, like, lacking in all that, but it just kind of came together as, like, I have a bunch of resources, when's the game going to be over? Oh, I can't do much more, and this person can, so now they have the most points that they won, and we can steal each other's people. Okay. So, yeah, it wasn't a positive first impression, but I really thought it was worth mentioning that so many people have enjoyed the game, so... Like you said, I don't think we did anything wrong, but hey, last year was my year for getting rules wrong. Oh, we played it this year, so that doesn't count. Did we? No, we played it last year.
We played it last year,
yeah. All right. Like the 28th.
December 27th.
There you go, nice. Awesome. Okay, next up is Australia. So Australia's from Stronghold Games and Martin Wallace, and it is... like a farming train game, then Cthulhu attacks.
Yeah, of course.
It makes perfect sense. The combat here is really unique in that you just draw cards and it's very quick and smooth. I heard people saying, was it Joel Eddy was saying, like, oh, it could take a while sometimes. I was like, a while? Like 25 seconds?
Oh, no, some of them.
Did you have some of them take longer? Gotcha. Okay. It's just draw. So, yeah, but got a chance to play this. I really enjoyed my game of it. I didn't expect to. I thought the Cthulhu theme was totally fine with me. It was not overt. Again, I will go to my thing. I'm not a Cthulhu, like, yes! But I'm also not like, oh, no, it's Cthulhu. But I don't get the draw. I try to get the draw. I'm going to try Arkham Horror 3rd Edition. Just try it, you know, in terms of all that. But this was really cool. I mean, Martin Wallace just always comes up with just something that inherently seems simple and just makes you make all sorts of strategic decisions. So you're picking what, like, one action do you want to do, and then it has that time track that goes around where, oh, I spent three actions, so now you're behind me, so you get to go to catch up with me. And then Cthulhu has his own time token where he shows up and starts attacking. And so you're trying to defend against that and not have him attack all your stuff. And there's all this system for automating, which I thought was generally pretty smooth, you know, especially if somebody gets a game under their belt and then can kind of explain those pieces to you, and you're collecting some resources. So my game was like an hour and 15 minutes. You played like a 2.5 hour game of it.
Was that long? I don't know. I didn't keep an eye on the clock. It did feel a little long.
Yeah.
And I know, like, no one really abused the system, which probably hurt the experience. You know, I feel like it was one where I wanted to see a little bit more. Or, you know, it was kind of middling for a lot of it, and we were all kind of doing basic things.
Gotcha.
You know, without someone actually pushing the boundaries on, you know, what could be done, I think we were all just kind of, you know, falling in line with, like, oh, just do this basic... You know, gain right. resources, do turn them in, upgrade, and all that sort of stuff. And I think there was more that we were kind of missing out on trying to, like, to figure out how to abuse it. I think that would have helped our experience. It was fine. I mean, I enjoyed it. I think he enjoyed it too. I know
played it a couple times since.
Okay, so and then Ron was also in the play. I don't think he was liking it as much. So.
But you guys were also playing until, what, like 12:30 at night?
Yeah, it was late. Night. It was on the end of a longer day.
A day where we started at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Noon, actually, I think.
We had played like
I think Ron
quacks,
came to my house
right?
at like noon, so.
So, yeah.
We'd
no,
been
it was,
going 12 hours.
I know a lot of people were... I didn't really have high expectations initially for the mm-hmm. game. And then a few people were, you know, just saying how much fun it was and kind of planting a seed of what to expect. And then, you know, playing through, it definitely was not what I was anticipating, but it was fun. I'd like to play it again at some point, but I guess this is one that just feels like it needs someone to kind of herald it and get it to the table, right? Like without someone really pushing to get it in front of me, I don't think I'm going to be suggesting it. And I don't think I'm going to play it with Rachel. Like, it doesn't seem like a theme It's just like, you know, I'll have to find a time at some point. But
I feel like it surprised me because I was like you. I didn't really have expectations. And then I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't strike me as like, oh, man, do I need to go back and rework my top 10 list? It wasn't that.
Right,
it was just exciting that it's almost like hearing that a movie isn't very good and then seeing it be like, oh, I enjoyed that. Right? Like,
right.
So it was kind of like, oh, it was... Great! I really had fun. I enjoyed that night and that play, so it was interesting on that front. We'll do one more here.
Yeah,
we've got several things, but we played Kalimala. So Kalimala is from ADC Blackfire and Stronghold Games. Steven was nice enough to give us a copy at PAX Unplugged to review. I have actually played the ADC Blackfire version. There really isn't any different in the versions, but I played it earlier in the year and now had this copy. We got a chance to play the other night, 4-player. And thematically, you are in the Mediterranean and extended areas, and you're making silk and other goods, and you're donating the goods to various cities to make artworks and just buildings, and you're sending the silk off and trading it either by land or by sea. That's not the game. The game is the mechanics, and the main mechanic of this game being I put an action token down, I get to do two actions adjacent to that token. You put it between them. If I can't do an action, I get to draw a card, which gives me a future action of whatever's on that card, and then later on somebody can stack on top of me, they get to do the two actions, and then I get to do the two actions. And that continues until there's a fourth one. That fourth disc then will go to a scoring section, and it will score area control for 15 different categories, one at a time, and those get put out randomly every game, as well as the action tiles get put out randomly, for the most part. And you go through all those scoring tiles. Once all those scoring tiles have been scored, you make sure there's equal turns, everybody has a secret scoring objective, and all of those get scored 5-3-1 points. Boom, that's it. That's the game. It's just very clever in how it's created to be. It's relatively simple, but creates high levels of interaction with what's happening.
Yeah.
And I think it's thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah. You played it early in the year, did you say? You said it was Conclave. When was that?
Yeah, I played in Conclave in February.
Okay. Because you had been talking about it since then, like I needed to try it out,
yeah.
right? And it was really fun. I had a great time with it. I think it's just kind of in that it's the system is fun to try to figure out.
Right.
And you're always balancing, like, you know, different scoring opportunities and kind of trying to have your hand in a little bit of everything without going too far to, like, so you don't have something in, you know, like the important times or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, it seemed like it went over well. Like, we liked it, which was good.
Yeah.
I don't know how much we played. Yeah.
We're frustrated. And somewhat rightfully so. I think a little bit of missing the system, like you said. Like, I was saying there were times where I was like, well, I better have this score now so I get something rather than letting it ride around and I'll get nothing if people jump on top of it. I'd rather, because you basically score 3-2-1 points. So it's like, boy, if I'm in the two boat, I'm just going to score it.
Yeah.
Because I'll get 2 points. If I let it go, I might get 0 points by the time that scores. Even sometimes the 1 point category, and if anybody ever handed it to you on a, hey, you get 3 points, like, let's score that now, you know?
Right.
And trying to keep the other players from kind of maximizing on what they could do was key. So I just think it's great, and the way it interacts is fun.
Yeah.
To figure out all those things and what you want to do and work through all that. Thematically, there's nothing there, but who cares?
Yeah, no, there wasn't, but it's got the, like, I think, because it's kind of that area control mentality that I think is making, it's forcing people to play around things or do things differently, you know, and, like, it's not just, I don't know, it's not simple in its area control, like, I guess it's, like, I don't know what I'm trying to get at, like, the area control to actually accomplish controlling areas is a little bit more complex than just, you know, dudes on a map, right? Like, you're having to think through how to actually accomplish things and do things at the right time for it to make sense.
Predict what other players will do, predict where, how far it'll score. Because at first, those 15 tiles don't go at all, and then all of a sudden they just start rifling off one every other turn.
Yeah, you know? And if you can have, I mean, it's always trying to balance the number of rounds with the number of people too, which is fun because, you know, it's not an equal equal share of the points that people are going to get. So if you can do a couple things, like accomplish a couple goals within one action, then that's great. You know, you're just trying to work toward doing that. And that, like, min-maxing of everything, which is kind of overwhelming, right?
Right, yeah.
So you're just trying to do that. And I really like when you have to think through stuff like that.
It seems to also allow for just, like, playing kind of perfect turns. Like, I'm going to make sure I get 4 actions and give you 2. And then next turn, I'm going to get 2 actions but give out 2 to these players. And it also seems to allow for this, like, the collecting of cards and having one big turn.
Right.
Like, it feels like both can be viable. And you might do both within a game, which is neat. It's not like, oh, try to get a whole bunch and do one big turn. It's not a big wave. It can just be little things at a time and work as well. So, because...
Mm-hmm. And I could see the biggest frustration, like, you know, there are times where you're just, like you said, you're playing the table, and as long as, like, you know, like, I could see something where, it, like, everyone else kind of works to mess you up. I could see that being a problem, but it didn't really happen that way in our game. Like, I know there were a couple times where it was, like, close, and some people could kind of sneak in and try to do something that would really hurt one person a little bit more, but... I don't know, I guess that's just, again, that's trying to figure out what other people are trying to accomplish as well as what you're trying to do.
Right, right.
So.
Cool. That's that. We've talked about a lot. Now I'm just looking forward. It's funny, it's like, oh, this is supposed to be the lull, like, con season isn't here, and everybody's taking a break for, like, Christmas and post that, and then I look at the list of games that I haven't played, like, that are very recent, in the store. I know Aeon's End Legacy is kind of sitting there. Concordia Venus came in. I saw that today. Played my first game of Blackout, but I got a Blackout Hong Kong. Got to play that with everybody. Forum Trajanum. Kathy and I played that last night. We're playing through, I guess we're going back on this, but we're playing Scythe, Rise of Fenris. Mm-hmm. Crusaders, Thy Will Be Done, I really want to play. What else has kind of been around and out? Can you think of anything? I mean, it's obviously a bunch.
Yeah, nothing jumps out as, like, the game, but when you're looking through the list of stuff that's come out, like, there's a lot,
Yeah.
So that's just what kind of jumps to mind. You know, it's not the thing. I mean, we played Goo Gong. Came out.
Yep.
Yeah, nothing else that's like the thing that I'm, you know.
I mean, Wingspan is going to be the one. Underwater right. Cities is going to be big as those release coming up. Ganchan's Clever is finally releasing in America. I mean, a lot of people are kind of playing that on the app, but now they get a chance to actually play that with other people.
Yeah.
You know, without...
I wonder if that'll otherwise. Do well. I mean, it seems like it's died down.
Yeah, it's long tail. But it'd be interesting to see how much people enjoy it, not to get the maximum score, like, on the app, but to play against other people
right.
and outwit them, right? Oh, I only scored 184, but that was higher than anybody else, right? Like a defensive match in football or baseball. Like, oh, you know, some of my favorite games were 1-0 games, you know? Like, but...
Just do better than...
Yeah, but that's not exciting if I'm playing against myself on a video game. Then I want it to be, you know, 37-0. So that I did a lot on that. So. Cool, that'll end this episode, 115. But until next time, I'm your host, The Brant.
And I'm your co-host, Brian.
We hope you step into the portal.